Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
To Lacazette, down, round the goalkeeper, gets to the byline, he's very wide, but then turns and shoots and scores a stunning equaliser for Arsenal.
There's a chance on here for Chicharito Hernandez! It's 4-2 to West Ham.
Lamella's in, angles tight, goal! Eric Lamella, super 1-2 with Son Heung-min, and Eric Lamella gives Spurs the lead.
He needed one touch of the ball, Raheem Sterling, and he pulled the trigger. And he planted the ball across the face of Alex McCarthy and into the far corner.
Pogba's in there and Szczęsny can't keep it out. United have scored again.
It's the Premier League preview show for week 12 of the 18-19 season. I'm Tom Rennie and coming up this weekend, Jose Mourinho swaggers straight from victory in Turin to the home of Manchester United's closest rivals. Can they pull off another shock result just like they did in their last visit to Manchester City? Elsewhere, Newcastle and Huddersfield both won last week. Is this for real? Have they turned the corner? It's home games for both and a chance to go back to back. It's our last show before the Wayne Rooney testimonial international break, so we best get to it. It's the Premier League preview show. Let's say hello to our panel, starting with TalkSport's football editor, David Walker. How are you, mate? You all right?
Yeah, very good, Tom.
Great to have you with us, as ever, looking very smart and sharp and ready for some hot football debate.
That's
why
changing.
We invite you. No, that's how you always are. Also with us on the programme, a former Premier League winner with Manchester United. I'm assuming the chief cheerleader of the Jose Mourinho fan club as of this week is Mr. Paul Parker. How are you, mate?
I'm fine, thank you, Tom.
Lots of praise for Jose coming up.
Measured.
Let's say Manchester United won. Good that they won and they did it quite well as well.
Good man, well handled. Also with us this week, a former captain of Manchester City and West Ham United, more importantly, Steve Lomas is here. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, Tom.
Great to have you all with us this week. By the way, if you're listening to this programme on a radio station, you can download an extended podcast. Just search for TalkSport Premier League Preview Show on Acast, iTunes, Spotify, any good podcast provider. Right, let's get into match one. Manchester City against Manchester United, 4:30 UK time on Sunday. City haven't lost any of their last 53 Premier League games against sides starting the day outside the top four, and they've scored 6 goals in their last 2 games in just a week. Their opponents, Manchester United, defensive issues all season, conceded 18 goals in their 11 Premier League games so far this campaign, but in the last 7 days, it's 2 come-from-behind away wins at Bournemouth and then against Juventus. Let's start, Paul Parker, with you. Jose Mourinho cups his ear to the fans in Turin following victory. He almost seemed in a good mood after the win. Have they turned the corner? Have you been impressed by them in the last 2 games?
I think if you're looking at a little bit of good fortune and you're looking for the fact of when you've been generally over the duration poor for 45 minutes and you're getting through the back door, you'll accept it, but there's still a problem. There's a reason why you're not starting well. With the cupping of the ear, still a little bit classless, in my opinion. You're a manager of Manchester United, and when you go to the likes of Juve, you're expected to challenge them. You're even expected to a point to be able to go there and win. United have gone and done that very, very late, which is typical Champions League fashion. Spurs a testament to that. And to go and do that, you should be going around and saying, yep, 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 and this, you know, and you should then be there, shake hands, but then if you want to shout and scream in your dressing room, you do that. But to go out there and go there for you and do what you do for your own personal reasons is actually disrespecting Manchester United, in my opinion, to go there because of his issues with Juve. Even at Old Trafford, he was holding three fingers up to a meeting. I've done a proper treble, not their domestic one. He's not giving Manchester United as a club respect, and Manchester United are losing it as a club.
I think the thing about it as well is, you know, the questions were the players behind him. For me, the players have answered that, you know, coming from behind a couple of times, especially at Juve. All right, they rid the luck. But for me, don't take the focus away from the players. They've done it. You know, he gets credit for making the two subs because I think Mata and Fellaini makes a massive difference in nicking the game. So he's got his credit. He doesn't need to do that, Paul.
Yeah, I'll just say one little bit. You carry on, yeah. Steve.
Yes.
I think the substitution by Juve was a catalyst of their downfall.
Yeah, but listen, at the end of the day, he can only impact on his team. Yeah. He can't impact on what Juve's doing. Mm. He's made the call. Listen, like I said, they've rolled the luck. Could easily have been 3-0 and the game out of sight. But, you know, he's hung in there. The players are fighting for him and scrapping for him to the end. So they're really answering his questions. He doesn't need to do that, but unfortunately it's in his nature.
Dave, could I ask you a question on this from the press side of things? Because I don't buy into conspiracy theories a lot. I don't often wear my tinfoil hat. But this week, Jose Mourinho was cleared by an independent panel of his foul and abusive language at the end of the Newcastle game. The Football Association have now appealed that. If you're Mourinho with all this going on, I know it's a Champions League game, but he'll feel authorities are against him, some of his own fans are against him, opposition fans are against him. Is there an agenda against Jose Mourinho?
If there is one out there, I think Jose Mourinho can't really have too much complaints. You know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. If you're going to go around waving your fingers in the air to Juventus fans, you're going to tell Liverpool fans to shush when you're a Chelsea manager, all this stuff. He's made a career out of it.
I think as well, another thing, the odd thing, he was at the Chelsea incident where the assistant got up and gave him a bit, you know, lack of respect. Mm. You know, so it's like you're saying, it's a double-edged sword. Mm. He can't, you know, want respect without giving it out. And I think that's where the press are against him, because he just doesn't want to give that respect out, which is due.
There was a great line. We can't play the audio here, unfortunately, but there was a great line in his post-match comments in Turin where he was asked what he said on the pitch. And he said, "Do you speak Italian?" And the interviewer says, "No." And he says, "Well, the Football Association must. I've asked them what I had to say," which I thought was very funny. Let's talk about the team. Alexis Sanchez starting up front. Romelu Lukaku has been quote-unquote injured. How's he done for you, Alexis Sanchez? And will he start there this weekend against City?
Asking how he done last night.
Yeah, and against Bournemouth as well.
I would say he was adequate, as best be it. Is he the ideal person to play in that role for Manchester United without Lukaku? No. At Arsenal, he done it, and it worked well with Arsenal, the way they play. But you could see that United had a little bit more ball retention. You could see they went forward with more purpose because the ball was held up longer in the final third than generally well it is with Lukaku there. So you can say it worked that way with Lukaku not being there. But I'm looking, if I'm going to look to the game on at the weekend, I'm going to have to say he could bring Lukaku back because he could go for sizes everything. I think you could see Fellaini come back. You could just see it being sizes everything, because that's the one thing against City is they're not a big team. Mm. Obviously, you have to get the ball to put the ball in the box. But still, when the opportunities occur, Manchester United can take advantage, as they did with their winning goal last night.
I think set pieces, and certainly with Ashley Young's delivery, it's superb. You know, they will have a chance. You look at Matic, you look at the size that they've got in the team. They've got probably six players 6'3" and above, you know, and City are fragile at defending set
plays.
And
that's how they did them last season, right? Yeah,
exactly, you know, 100%.
That's how the game turned.
And that weird few minutes where Paul Pogba and Alexis Sanchez looked like a world-class pairing. I was doing that game and I just remember thinking, they're buried here, dead and buried. I think Sterling missed a late chance for City. Could have been 3-0 and all over. And there was a 10-minute spell where Pogba and Sanchez, it looked phenomenal. Pogba scored a couple. Sanchez set them both up. They played great football. I just wonder whether that front pairing pushing Pogba further forward. I think it may have been Darren Fletcher this week talking about playing Pogba off the striker.
In my opinion, that's correct. I've been saying it for quite a while. If you watch when he played for Juve before, you watch the way he played, he was always getting into the box. Even with France, you see him in a box more and more controlled. I think take away the element, the bits where his game's lacking, the bits where everybody's got an opinion about him as a person, his application, take that away and say, I need you in that box as often as possible, threatening that final third. Go up, if you get the ball to your feet in the final third, go one against one, try and beat him, because he's very good in that situation, Steve.
Exactly. Another thing as well is his little tricks and flicks. When he's on the defensive side, of which isn't very good, he isn't structured, he doesn't go with runners, he doesn't move his feet. All that nasty, dogged stuff that he's never really had to do. Mm. You know, all them little tricks and flicks, you want him to be doing that in the opposition box. Another thing on Alexis Sanchez, I think he looks hungry again. I thought he lost his hunger. He looked, at least the last two games, the Bournemouth game, he looked like he wants to get in them positions by running forward. And I think, you know, him playing, Pogba playing off him, should be, on paper, a nice little foil.
Yeah, I will say, and it's a little bit negative, is that I've seen everything about United, and you're saying about, you just said there about Mourinho might be getting his thing back, his mojo back, if we use that word. But I want to see what it's like if Manchester United go and get beat again. That's the next bit for me. Is he going to go back to what he was before, or has he learnt from before he can't do that anymore?
He's certainly more charming in victory than he is defeat.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt.
We're going to move on to Man City. The last game in midweek, they score six. Briefly on Raheem Sterling, you see the penalty decision that was given against him. Should he have said something to the referee? He didn't touch me?
Well, it's not his job to that. The referee's job is the referee. Maybe his job is to cut his toenails because he obviously tripped over one. But no, listen.
But it's not his job. No stick for him, right?
No, it's not his job. Listen,
was it Robbie Fowler who did it like a decade ago?
Yes, he did. And he obviously didn't change the decision because he still got the penalty.
Oh, did he, right?
Yeah, Sterling still got the penalty. So the referee wouldn't be able to change that, I don't think. I don't think it's ever happened, has it?
No.
Where players got up and said, sorry, that wasn't a penalty.
And if he did, if he put his hand up, right, and said, ref, it's not a penalty, and the referee for some reason listened to him or whatever. So that's in a relatively meaningless game against Shakhtar Donetsk in the Champions League where they were coasting. If he does it in that game, what happens if he does it? It happens again in this game, last minute, and it's 0-0 in a Manchester derby. Like, you set a dangerous precedent.
Would anyone put their hands up? Well, yeah. I mean, I like to think that I would, but I probably wouldn't.
I would.
Would you?
I would go and whisper in somebody's ear to the opponent and say, Christ, I got away with that one, didn't I? And he might want to call me every name under the sun, but I'd go to him. I wouldn't go to the fella who might be wearing the green, the orange, the yellow, the black top with the whistle in his hand and say anything to him. There's no reason to do that. There was an argument going on last night. I think Jason Cundy was arguing with someone last night on Talk Sport about it, and Jason was virtually telling him, "Don't players have got no reason to go and say it's not a penalty?" Mm. And that's what that's what his argument was. He was arguing with someone from the press about it.
I think the one thing
is
not to overrate. Listen, Raheem Sterling's in the form of his life.
And, he was fantastic in the game,
and it's great. Listen, 22-year-old British player, you know, he's now been talked about in the same breath for me as Aguero, De Bruyne, Silva at Man City, where he was a bit a year ago. You know, people are going, well, he flatters to deceive, he doesn't really do it against the big clubs, he's erratic in finishing. I think, tip the hat to the young man, he's worked on that there, he's worked and got better. Listen, there's still improvement to be made, which is frightening.
Yeah, but the improvement he's made already has been fantastic.
It's been phenomenal.
Yeah. A big area that he can improve, though, in is scoring against Manchester United. He's never done it in the Premier League.
For Liverpool, for City,
never
for anyone?
Never scored against Manchester United in the Premier League.
This could be a big weekend for it, then. And he'll be in the front three, right? I imagine Aguero comes in, despite Gabriel Jesus' hat-trick.
Yeah, I think so. It's good for him as well. Jesus is now getting back to the form he was 16 months ago.
He's had a rough start to this year, hasn't he, Jesus?
Well, he's had a few injuries, and then obviously Aguero's form has made him have to sit and wait, which is, you know, he's had to be patient. So good for him. It just, you know, the juggernaut just continues.
Who's going to win this game, though? On paper, it should be City, right?
Yeah.
They should be easily beating Manchester United with the form that both clubs are in. But like we saw last season, this game, Manchester United might just raise that level.
I just think Pep's one of those people, he improves players, and I just think himself, he's got something in his mind how to combat what United are going to want to do, and that is get the ball in the box as often as possible. And I think some way he would have combated. The same thing isn't going to happen to him twice, as you don't suddenly go and lose 3-0 at home and then go and lose 3-0 in your next game. You stop that by saying we're not going to concede, and you make that your statement.
Like you don't do
it. I think if Man United are to win, it has to be something similar to Juventus. They've got to get whatever chances they've got to take. Mm. It's as simple as that. There, they can't afford to miss. I think City will dominate possession 65-70%, and United will be living off scraps.
Two other teams unbeaten at the top of the Premier League. We'll talk about them: Chelsea and Liverpool.
Still Mane bursting into the penalty area, back to towards Lallana, and then it falls to Sturridge, who somehow from 7 yards out lifts the ball over the top of the crossbar with not a defender in sight. That is a massive miss.
Kovacic making a noose of himself in there as well. It's not the worst of balls. It's come from Morata at the far post, and he's picked out the bottom corner from the narrowest of angles.
Right, let's talk about Liverpool. They take on Fulham, 12 o'clock UK time on Sunday. The Reds unbeaten in their last 26 Premier League home games, their longest run of unbeaten matches at Anfield since 2009. Fulham are coming into this weekend one of just three teams yet to keep a clean sheet in English league football this season. The other two, anybody?
Cardiff.
Oh, it's good, but it's not right. Yeah, that was my Irish impression there. I won't do that again. No. Macclesfield and Sheffield Wednesday, the other two teams. Let's talk Liverpool first. Steve, let's come to you first on this. Beaten in midweek by a red star at Belgrade. Didn't start Roberto Firmino in the game. Sturridge got the nod instead. Yeah. What impact will that defeat have on this weekend? Do you see many changes?
I think there'll be changes, but I don't think it'll have any effect. I think Fulham look like the manager, you know, you wouldn't like to think he's going to get sacked after playing away at Anfield, but if they get a good hiding, I could see him going.
I think that's the only way he can.
I think that's the only hide. And I think the problem with Fulham is they have lost against the rivals around them.
And lost badly as well.
And that kills you as a manager. You know, they've got their mini league and you've got to win them games. You'd like to think that he won't be judged. From Fulham's point of view, you hope he at least puts up a good performance and it's not a surrender. But, you know, I can only see a victory for Liverpool.
Dave, Slavica Jokanović, a man you know well from his time at Watford and, of course, being a journalist in football. Lots of talk that Scott Parker might be coming in to replace him. There's been links with, of course, he's working at the club right now. That was the story in the paper on Thursday. Obviously, the David Moyes, Sam Allardyce spectre hangs over every manager at this time of the season. Why has it gone so wrong for him at the start of this campaign? What's he done wrong?
Well, I think you've got to look at the defence. And it's changed so much, as we've spoken about nearly every time we've spoken about Fulham this season on the show, is that defence has changed week in, week out. They had a really good unit last season and they were given plaudits for the way they played football and their attacking football, and that was brilliant, but it was also grounded on having a really solid back four, and that was completely obliterated in the summer. An influx of new players have come in, and he's had a few injuries as well, and it just seems that he hasn't been able to find the right balance and the right mixture throughout the whole team to hit the ground running. Everyone just assumed that because they'd spent £100 million in the summer and they brought some real headline names, they were going to kick on and them and Wolves were going to be up in the, you know, in the top echelons of the top half of the table. But it's been a disaster so far. He's clearly under pressure, as any manager would be at the bottom of the table in that situation. But a defeat to Liverpool, I mean, that shouldn't really be the casting vote on whether you lose your job if you're the Fulham manager.
As you said earlier, unless it's something embarrassing.
Yeah.
And the last time there was anything embarrassing at Liverpool with Fulham, I was involved in it. We got beat 10-0.
Okay, right. Yeah. So that's the bar, right?
I thought I'd throw that one in just in case you've got it written down on a bit of paper. In other words...
That's that one gone.
In other words, I'm deflecting there, by the way. But my take on Fulham at the moment is that I just think Jokanović, first of all, is he spent £100 million, but that wasn't all he wanted to do. All him. I think some of it was other people had to say that.
There's been historic problems with that, haven't there?
And that's still going on, by the way, within that club. I have to look at it as well, is that when you do get promotion, and I've never been in a side probably who's won promotion, but we've seen it in recent seasons over the Premier League. A lot of managers, you know, they say you shouldn't really involve sentiment in football, but a lot of them do because they stick with a lot of the players who come up. They want harmony. They want those players who've earned the right and getting up from the Championship and going through the playoffs and then winning that final. It must be amazing to do that. Yeah. Winning a league title, winning an FA Cup. I think it's completely different for doing what those players have done to achieve that. And then all of a sudden, you walk in first day back after your summer off and enjoyment and everyone patting your back, and all of a sudden there's half a dozen new players on one side and there's all the oldies the other side, and all of a sudden those ones come straight in and you're not there, I think you lose a bit. And I think Fulham might have lost that little bit because they looked disjointed against Huddersfield. They couldn't, before, the one thing everyone said about Fulham, they overpassed. They couldn't even pass against Huddersfield. And I think they've lost that continuity. Yeah, yeah. They've lost that harmony they had in that dressing room.
Well, certainly, if you're bringing players in that are on treble what the players got to get them in the Premier League, you know, unless, and it's like anything, if you're winning games of football, it's not an issue, Paul.
Yeah.
You know, you go along with it. But when you're losing games of football, it then becomes an issue in the camp, and where there's a split between the guys that got them promoted and the guys come in, I don't know. But sooner or later, they've got to try and eke out a result. Obviously, they're not going to get anything at Anfield. I think the big one the week after is Southampton at home. You know, then they've got Chelsea away, and then they've got another. I think they've got Leicester at home.
Yeah.
So,
then United away.
And United away. So really, for
that's
me,
tough.
He's got to win them two games at home. And that's really, else you can't see anything but him being out of a job.
Unless they lose 10-0 and he should be sacked. And any player who played that day should probably never have played again. I think we can all agree on that. Let's move on.
I wanted to say let's move on there, but you're in charge, so I'm glad you said it.
Let's move on to Chelsea against Everton. 2:15 UK time on Sunday. Chelsea looking to remain unbeaten in their opening 12 games in a top flight season, for only the second time in their history. It was 14 back in 2014. Everton have won just one of their last 16 away Premier League games in London, losing the four games in 2018 in the capital city. Chelsea play on Thursday, so of course we're recording this before that game, but we'd imagine they've made lots of changes for their Europa League game. Eden Hazard came on last week and saved the day. Looks like he's going to be fit enough to start this weekend, and he does make such a big difference, doesn't he?
Oh, amazing amount of difference for a side of the stature of Chelsea as such, that they still rely on one player as such, and he's an amazing player. You have to say that. There's nothing else you can say about it. The difference he makes to that team and the belief he must give those players that when he's on the park or if he's sitting on the bench, and as we've seen midweek, they need him.
Yeah.
They can't do without him.
Can I ask you about Morata, though? I think that's quite interesting. He scored a couple of goals last week and has been talking about a return to confidence, return to form. He feels better about himself. Then Maurizio Sarri, after the game, said he's a bit of a fragile character. I found that a little bit strange, that when he's finally returned to his form, the manager is publicly saying, I find him a bit fragile. Am I reading too much into that? I thought it was a bit odd thing to say.
Well, you would have thought so. You're trying to build him up, and Paul will tell you, no matter what anybody says, when you're at the top of your game, you don't think about things, and it must be even harder for a striker when you're low in confidence and the chances are coming. And I think he's openly turned out and said, listen, he wasn't making runs because he didn't want to miss chances. You know, he wasn't doing his normal thing, and that's a lack of confidence that he's afraid to miss. So it was good for the player. You know, he's got a couple of goals. Hopefully that'll kickstart him. And like you say, with Hazard coming back, you know, it's a great man to do the supply line.
Everton briefly victorious last week with Richarlison with a couple of goals. We've been speaking on this programme, Dave, about getting him centre forward for a few weeks, and a couple of near misses, but last week he was fantastic.
He's a terrific player. I think he's only going to get better and better, to be honest. You spoke about confidence there with Morata. That was the big issue for him last season. He had a couple of games in the transition between Marco Silva and Javi Gracia when the new manager came in at Watford. He just completely lost his confidence, missed a few easy chances, and then he just couldn't hit a barn door for the rest of the season. But he got a goal in the first game of this season away to Wolves or Everton. Two goals, in fact, that day. And he's never looked back. And I think he's a young player, he's confident, you give him the ball in the right areas at the moment and he's going to cause any team problems. But he himself is a worry for Chelsea. But as a team, Everton, do we see anything from them that's going to trouble Chelsea, really?
I don't, away from home. I was disappointed. I was at Old Trafford and I saw him there the other weekend, and I really thought Everton were going to do something because they've got a horrendous record at Old Trafford. I think it's 1-28 games.
Even worse at Stamford Bridge, not 1-23 there.
So I kind of saw them there. First half, weren't really fussed at all. In fact, they did start with 10 men, by the way. People shouting out over the tannoy, asking for Walcott to come out when he's ready. But and someone said they took him off. They did a substitution. I don't know why they'd done it, because he was already off. But they were really
missed
poor.
An open goal last week as well, didn't he? Poor old Theo.
But the second half performance against Manchester United, they'll be saying, they would have said to themselves, we should have got a point out of that. So there is something about them when they go away from home, and that word used by Mr. Neville, I'm going to turn around and use it against for Everton. They're a bit flaky away from home.
Yeah,
they have got pace though. in wide areas. Chelsea playing a high line.
Yeah, but if you don't want to defend, you know what I mean? If you don't want to run back and defend, because listen, it goes without saying, when you're away from home, you're going to have less possession. So you've got to defend, you've got to be resilient, you've got to be dogged, you know what I mean? And especially with the likes of going away to Chelsea, you know, if you get 30% possession, you're lucky. It's as simple as that there. So, you know, you don't need to be Einstein to realise, listen, you're going to have to defend and you're going to have to work as a unit.
But they can cause some damage with some of the players they've got. Bernard, Sigurdsson, Andre Gomez looked good last couple of weeks as well.
Can I just butt in there? Gomez was absolutely fantastic at Old Trafford. I didn't realise how good a player he was. In possession of the ball, he is... just in a manner, people were hitting him, and he was staying on his feet, not falling down. He showed his strength, good pass through the ball. He was mostly their best player at Old Trafford at that time. He was absolutely fantastic in that game.
Right, we've got to move on. Let's talk about Newcastle and Huddersfield up next. They won last week. Is this script right? All right, we'll do it.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. Be gambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
The free kick came into the penalty area and there was Iosi Perez to deflect it into the back of the net. It's Newcastle 1, Watford 0.
It'll be Lerver again to take the corner from the near touchline. Left-footed outswinger once more. Headed back to Lerver. There's a Fulham player down in the penalty area. Huddersfield have continued! And Huddersfield have taken the lead! In controversial circumstances!
Newcastle against Bournemouth and Huddersfield against West Ham. Two games Saturday, 3 o'clock UK time. Incredible story last week, really, lads. Newcastle victorious against Watford, despite being outplayed for much of that game. Huddersfield, I mean, if you weren't going to score and win against Fulham at home, you were never going to do it in the opening weeks of the Premier League from what we've seen. Let's talk about those two teams, starting with Newcastle.
They technically didn't really score.
No, exactly. See, that's the thing, is it was an own goal. So I'm still saying no one scored Huddersfield at home since Tom Ince in April.
April,
I think. So we can still do that. Was it against Watford? You would know that. Let's talk about Newcastle first. They were out play for a lot of the game against Watford, but kind of a bit like Man U in Turin in a lot of ways. They hung on in there. They got a chance. It was taken by Jose Perez, kept a clean sheet, and Bournemouth at home, it's traditionally a tough game for them, but there's every chance they could win this.
Yeah. I look at Newcastle when it's a case of the players, the manner in which they're playing relates to the manager's attitude. And they know in themselves is that anything they do wrong and the manner they do it, everything's going to go blamed on the person at the top. Even the fans, all they're bothered about is the man at the top. The Newcastle fans were used to them saying, we love our team, we're this, we're that. I think really, in theory, they've got to get behind the team and forget about the person who's running it. Easy to say, because I'm not Mr. Football fan, I'm not a Newcastle fan, but the person at the top is not going to affect how the team plays. That's all personal things going on, or whether infrastructure with a club and not putting money into the club. It's about their team. And Newcastle, with what they've got and the manager they've got, should be doing a damn sight better than what they are now. Their application, when I saw it when I was at Crystal Palace, I saw them play there, was absolutely embarrassing. To play like that away from home, if that was me and I was getting the coach and I'm thinking about the one person who was managing me, was Sir Alex Ferguson at that time, if we'd have performed like that, And we would not have wanted to get on that coach because he could have pinned you down for that 4.5 hour journey back to Manchester and you would have come off that coach and everything would have gone. Yeah. Everything. He would have ripped everything. Even just the fact that he didn't open his mouth, you would feel it. Benitez, he's just
maybe
not
he's
fussed.
Maybe he's hiding behind a little bit of the owner as well. You know, it's taking the pressure off him because he can do no wrong. I've watched Newcastle a lot this year and to be fair, it's an interpretation of the way the manager is, but I still don't think they've got great quality. You know, bottom line. Listen, they should be doing better, but how much better? 3 or 4 points? Yeah. I don't see them. I see them if they finish 13th, 14th. That's about where that squad is, as good. And I think the fortunate thing for Newcastle is there's quite a few other teams that are struggling at the minute. They're not cut adrift where they could quite easily be.
Going to be tough against Bournemouth. Beaten by Man U last week. Their first 20 minutes, they should have been out of sight. Missed a couple of chances and all that sort of stuff. And then were pegged back late by Man U. And they often win here. Was it late goal last year? I think Steve Cook last minute got them a victory. They're looking to secure 3 consecutive away wins in the Premier League.
I think they go there confident.
Yeah.
I think Eddie Howe and his staff will watch that game last week against Watford. As you said, Watford probably should have won that game. Had a lot of chances. Newcastle did hang in there, but on balance of play, they weren't the better team. And Bournemouth have been doing very well this season. They'll take some amount of heart, although they'll be disappointed that they fell away in that game against Manchester United, but it is against Manchester United. Mm. You know, so I think they've got nothing to fear.
I think the thing I like about Eddie Howe is he's realised that you've got to score goals in the Premier League if you want to win games. It's all right being resilient and things like that there. That's why they're so open. That's why they can... Teams can come from behind, but you've got to remember as well, they've come from behind a lot this season, and that's the way they play. They're open, they take risks, and I really like the formation that they play. They're very attacking, they get people forward, they get the fullbacks forward, they get out of shape, whereas Newcastle are the total opposite. They're very rigid, very structured, and that's why they don't score enough goals.
And he's still being brave as a manager as well with a young lad Brooks.
Yes, of course. He looks a proper talent.
He does as well. He's found him at Sheffield. Lad wasn't playing regularly, and he's pulled him in. And you think he's been around it a long, long time.
He's thinking outside the box. There is players in the lower leagues, but they've got to have managers that give them an opportunity. And you know, you've got to tip your hat to Eddie for doing that.
Yeah. Really briefly, we're coming up to the Wayne Rooney testimonial weekend. Of course, Callum Wilson. We don't know if he's in the England squad or not, but being as they just give him out for free these days, he's got to be, right? He's been fantastic this season up front.
Yeah, he's done very, very well. And to be honest, if he's going to have a go and if they're going to pull him in, you've got to pull him in now while he's on that high, while he's feeling good. If they suddenly pull him in and things ain't going right for him, it's all wrong. If the way that Gareth Southgate has talked about it, then it should be now. Is there a striker doing better than him at this moment in time? I don't think there is. Even Harry Kane... Harry Kane might have nicked goals, but performance-wise, he's been very, very poor. But he's got the armband, so he's going to be there. But if you're looking outside of Harry Kane, English strikers, there isn't many really there who are doing it. Now Vardy has announced his international retirement, then obviously there's still a space
and
available.
And this is the perfect game for him to do it. You don't want to throw him in against Croatia, which could potentially be a very important match. We could get to the Nations League finals against USA.
Hmm.
Give him a go.
Start him, I think. Start him.
You've got to start him.
Well, he's got to bring Rooney on, hasn't he? So he's going to have to start him. Yeah. Someone's got to come off for old Wayne.
Well, at the end of the day, I think, listen, the kid, you look at his pace, you look at his movement, his finishing, he ticks all the boxes, doesn't he?
Been fantastic.
In today's way, it's gone with international football. I agree what Steve said, but I was looking at it during my time. I spent 6-7 months watching games in the stand and on the bench before Bobby Robson gave me my first cap.
Mm-hmm.
And we are still a little bit sharp giving them out quickly, but in today's you can
there
see
there were a lot more English players of quality back then.
Yeah. Mm. So what? You know? I wasn't quality then. Is that what you're saying?
You were one of the many players, and you were quality.
Tom, you've done well. But now about
that 10-0, you kind of shouldn't have gone to Italian 90. But we've got to move on.
You'd have 100 caps if you were playing nowadays.
You probably would. Yeah. Listen, we've got to move on. Huddersfield Town against West Ham United. Huddersfield victorious on Monday. Tough old slog of a match, no doubt about it. But they got their creative talents forward. They got Pritchard forward. They got Moy forward. They got Hadajonai attacking down the right hand side. They create a lot of chances against Fulham. Do they go equally as on the front foot against West Ham at the weekend?
I don't really think so. I think that's as open as we've seen Huddersfield ever. I think last season, their first season, they tried it a few times and they got smashed at home by the big boys.
Mm.
But I don't think they'll go that open against West Ham. I think they know that West Ham are a lot better than Fulham. West Ham are maybe not going to pass the ball as much. And be honest, Moy is their main player. But with West Ham, when you've got someone like Declan Rice in there, who can get close to people, will get close to him, and will take a lot away from what Moy does, you have to look at it and say that Huddersfield could go back to normal.
And what about West Ham from last week? 4-2 winners against Burnley. First half could have been out of sight. They were fantastic in that opening 45 minutes. They scored goals, created chances. Were pegged back a couple of times, and it probably could have been 3-3 before it ended up being 4-2. What do you make of them, Steve?
Yeah, it was a strange old game, like you said. Burnley, to be fair, was as poor as Burnley I've seen since they've come up to the Premier League. They were awful. But not taking nothing away from West Ham, Anderson looked like more like it, the player that can create and score goals. Obviously, you got Naltovic, who, you know, is awesome. If, you know, God forbid, if he was to get injured,
a little doubt this weekend, as he always is with that knee.
He's got a situation with his knee ongoing, but he would be a massive blow. So I think, yeah, from Huddersfield's point of view, I think they'll have one eye on West Ham's attacking threat, a lot better than Fulham's. So they'll be a little bit more measured. West Ham, they need to, I don't know what the stat was, we were trying to find it, but it's been a long time since they've won.
Yeah, last time they won back-to-back Premier League wins was January 2017.
So it's a big game for both teams, because obviously if Huddersfield could get back-to-back wins, it'd be a massive boost for them. If West Ham can get it, it gets them up to mid-table and has plenty of breathing room from, and then they can actually try and relax and start playing some football, because it has been the last 6 or 7, 8 games, there's been pressure on it. I know there's pressure in every Premier League game, but it seems to be that the players just can't relax at the minute. And I think a couple more wins, I think hopefully we'll see the real West Ham.
I was at West Ham on Saturday for the game, but I was also at the stadium on Wednesday this week for a launch of a community project, and everyone was on their best behaviour, as you would be at this event. But it was interesting just watching them when the cameras weren't on them, and they were getting involved with the kids and doing some bit of drills and stuff on the pitch. They all seemed genuinely quite happy. They seemed quite together. There was a lot of banter between the squad. Mark Noble got them off early at the end as well, which they're all very pleased about. And I just felt a good vibe in the stadium on Saturday as well, which certainly, as we know, hasn't always been the case in the last few seasons. And you know, you had Grady Diangana playing very well, a young kid who's come into the team sort of out of nowhere and has seized the opportunity. And I think it's so important, as Steve said, if they get this back-to-back wins and they can crucially start building some momentum, if they can sort the fitness problems out as well.
There's been signs, aren't there? They were very unlucky against Leicester. Resolute display after going down to 10 men. Deflection kills them. I think even the Tottenham game, they should easily got a draw. You know, Lloris made three top saves to them. You know, they should maybe even won that game.
Brighton as well missed some chances, big chances, didn't
exactly, and the cup game as well. You know, so there has been signs. So I think the West Ham, when the fans will accept, if you're going out and attacking and trying to create chances, they will accept that. And I think there has been a feeling amongst the fans that at least we're going out and trying. Listen, I know it's a bit of a cliche, what is the West Ham way? For me, it's about attacking football. Go and try and win games. And to be fair to the team, they have been trying to do that.
Yeah, it's been great to see. Big game for West Ham, as it is for Huddersfield on Saturday. Got to move on. Next up, we'll talk about Southampton, who have sacked Les Reed this week. Big story. Maybe Mark Hughes to follow.
Manchester City 6, Southampton 1. The last time Mark Hughes brought a team to the Etihad was with Stoke City just over a year ago. That ended 7-2, so a 5-goal deficit again for his Southampton side.
Right, let's talk about Southampton up against Watford. 3 o'clock UK time on Saturday. On Southampton, we heard on Thursday they parted company with Les Reed. The official statement of the club thanked Les Reed for his work. He's been in charge of the transfer business, been in charge for the last, decade or so. That's seen a lot of talent go out the door. Just this summer we saw Dusan Tadic leave, replaced by El Yunusi. We've seen people like Graziano Pella leave, replaced by Manolo Gabbiadini, who's not quite done it. They said they want to find a new direction. 8 years he's been there at the club. Will they find a new direction as well by maybe changing manager should they lose against Watford this weekend? And should they?
I think we have to look at it somewhere along the line. Isn't working with Sparky. He hasn't. Nothing's really changed, and well, it has been under maybe their previous two managers. I think the fans could say more about than what I can. But if you're looking at the way Southampton have been, they was running like a little mini business, producing something. Can we sell it on for a profit? Money in the bank must be great. But after a while, I think those Southampton fans who love good footballers, love their big names down there. There's a little something about that little club in Hampshire which everyone seems to like. And they had this, they always finish within that top, always the top eight. There was always in and around, big games.
And that's overperforming, isn't it, for what they spent?
For what they spent, yes, without a doubt. But now, as we know, football is about cycles. And for them, that kind of bring those players coming through, flourishing, selling them on, has gone. So that profit has gone, what they was earning all the time. Those quality players coming through to enhance the team, to improve them, add energy, add guile, add everything that young players have got, has gone as well. Now we're seeing a team that is playing at a snail's pace, with nothing there. No improvisation, no creativity. Very, very negative side at the moment, Southampton.
I look at it a different way. Are they going to back Mark Hughes? Has he turned around and said, all right, this has worked for a while, but it's not going to continue forever. I want more of a focus as a manager. I want to pick my players. I want to live and die by the results, not by somebody else's. And maybe it's been a choice of, is it Les Reed or is it Mark Hughes? And they decided to go with Mark Hughes.
Yeah.
Only time will tell, but you're looking at it and thinking, you can't keep pulling rabbit from the hat. You can't keep bringing players in and selling them for the profit. You can do it for a while, but you know you can't continually and definitely doing that there. It's an impossibility.
Yeah, I just wonder how many, if we say top sides in the Premier League, are in that kind of, have an individual buying the players for the manager. Because it's something obviously we didn't know about during our time playing in the Football League, Premier League. Well,
we're always with managers who wanted to live and die by the players they brought in. You know, it has changed and it has worked a while at Southampton, but it's definitely gone stale over the last 18 months.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of clubs do operate that model, not just in the Premier League, across the big clubs. And it has been proven to work, but you've got to be really, really sharp on the recruitment side. The players that they brought in the last few seasons just haven't simply been as good as the ones they brought in before. They haven't had a Van Dijk or a Wanyama or a Tadic or any of those players, or Sadio Mane. All of a sudden, it's Boufal, who they spent big money on. Didn't do anything. It was a flop. El Yunusi's not been very
good. But that was a Puel pick, wasn't it? I think Boufal. It was a personal pick and it didn't work out. And
Gabbiadini showed a little bit of a flash at the start, has trailed off. So you've got to... You say you live and die by your signings. No matter who's picking them, whether it's the manager or the vice chairman or whatever they're called, the team's success will live and die by the signings.
From a manager's point of view, if the six signings are Les Reed signings, and he's gone out and he's performing horrendously, the manager's getting judged in that. Is that fair? That's what I asked.
Maybe not, but I'd say that most clubs that operate this sort of model, it's not probably as cut and dry as, you know, here's the six players we've signed this summer, get on with it. There's a discussion, there'll be conversations, there'll be, well, we've got four options in this position, this one's most likely, what do you think? And you come to a consensus, is my understanding.
I think that works with managers who are coming from that system. I think the problem is there's managers here who have been doing it a while, and all of a sudden someone says, like what's happened at Fulham, they don't want to do it that way, they want to do it on their own. Now, can you imagine that one? You're sitting there and everything, and you're having to go to the manager because he's done this, done that, and he turns around and says to you, oh, by the way, I didn't want you anyway. I didn't want to sign you. And you're sitting there and he says that to you. How are you going to feel as a person, as a man, that someone's saying, I didn't want to sign you. I'm only playing because he wanted you over there. You was on a list and re-recruited you off of stats. And I didn't want you. Yeah. Now, how many times does that happen? Or when it does happen, what's going to happen next?
You definitely need the buy-in. And the example is Javi Gracia at Watford. From day one, in the first press conference that he had as Watford manager, I was there. He was asked, it was in January, are you going to be buying this player? Are you going to sell Decore, Richarlison, all this? He said, I don't care. I'm here to be the coach. Whatever players I have to work with, I'll talk to the club about them. But my job is to make sure that my squad of players is best prepared for the football matches, and we know how to win matches and do well. And you have to want to do that, I think. And somebody like Mark Hughes is from the old school, he's from a different generation who just probably isn't best suited to that model. But as Steve said, Southampton, that's an admission on their part that this model that they currently operate isn't working for whatever reason. So it'll be interesting to see, do they replace Les Reed with someone? Do they give Mark Hughes money and say, right, it's over to you, Sparky, for January? We'll wait and see.
We are going to see. We've got to move on. What for the opponents this weekend? 6 wins and 19 points from 11 games. Their best ever start to a top flight season. They want to come back from that loss against Newcastle too. Let's talk about Arsenal up against Wolverhampton Wanderers. 4:30 UK time on Sunday. The Gunners unbeaten in 9 Premier League games. 7 wins and 2 draws in that time. After a 6-game unbeaten run, Wolves have lost their last 3 Premier League games. It has been a tough few weeks for Wolverhampton Wanderers, and the way Arsenal have played, Paul, in the last few weeks, I think this might be another tough afternoon.
It is going to be a tough afternoon. I know one thing, it's going to be a good game of football, by the way, and that's one thing, that's a guarantee with Wolves. They're decent, they stick to their principles. I like their coach, I like his manner, the way he is. And I love the way that they play. They've got some good individual players, some great players as well. Mm. But you have to say Arsenal, and I think all of us sat around and we were waiting for Arsenal. We saw the way they started. You think, this is going to take a while to get sorted out. He has come in Emery, and I liked him from Sevilla, the way he'd done it there. And I'll tell you what, I'm liking them even more now. The way Arsenal have just got better, and the individual players are all coming through now as well and getting better individually. That means the team's getting better. He's still not sure about his front line yet. I still, that's the bit he keeps flipping in and out of.
But scoring goals whilst being unsure isn't too bad.
But defensively, there's still a lot of work to be done.
We can agree, though, Emery has moved them on. They've got a great fighting spirit. Players are being individually trained. Iwobi, Xhaka, all improving. Tough task for Wolverhampton Wanderers this weekend. Crystal Palace up against Tottenham is 5:30 on Saturday. Palace winless in their 5 Premier League home games. Their longest run at the start of a season since 1997. Spurs have won more Premier League games in this calendar year. They do this every year, don't they, than any other side. 11 victories in 2018. They won in the Champions League in midweek. Steve, Tottenham Hotspur. And I'll tell you what they do really well. They've got a lot of great footballers, play a lot of great football. Lamela's look good, Moura's look good, all this. But they're the only team really up there, maybe United as well. They look for the aerial diagonal to Harry Kane, and teams kind of don't know what to do with it. And he's fantastic at either knocking it on or bringing other players in. But it's weird. It's so simple.
But that normal diagonal is hit by Eriksen. He puts it in with a feather glove. What a player he is. Now, he is, him and Harry Kane, two genuine world-class players. I watched him against, he'd just come back. I watched him against West Ham midweek. What a player he is. He is absolutely a delight to watch. And but it's a decent ball. It's the one ball that you struggle to defend. You can defend in the feet, get people shielding, but that little diagonal, good movement, it's hard to defend, isn't it, Paul, as a former fullback?
Oh, it is difficult to defend, and more than anything, even if the defender wins it, there's enough players around on that side to pick up the pieces after. He can either take it down or he can head it back. It opens the game up. So something is like going backwards. It's like just put a pair of flares on for the day. That's what it's about. It's good.
It's good
for
exactly. Good
Steve has.
He's seen my legs.
Got to ask you about Crystal Palace. Against Chelsea last week, they were very much in that game for a long spell of it. But the issue is that Zaha carries him forward, and he looks right, he looks left, and there's nobody. They've got to get someone up there to support Wilfried Zaha if they're going to score a goal, haven't they?
They do need they need someone else there. They need a focal point to rely on. You know, Benteke, keep mentioning him, feel sorry for him. But in the end, again, you can't keep feeling sorry for players after a while. They have to be doing it. Yeah. But Crystal Palace are a good team.
Yeah.
Every time they go away from home, the only thing they're disappointing is scoring goals and winning games. They are a good side. They're a good side at home. Very good at home. They've only scored 2 goals at home all season. And they struggle. And those goals come against Arsenal.
Yeah. Relatively tough games, don't they? They've had Liverpool, Arsenal. Yeah.
And they've competed
they've
in every
now.
Game. Yeah, yeah. Every game, Tom. They haven't been embarrassed.
Maybe they're a better team away from home, where teams come on to them and they can utilise the pace. At home, where there's a little bit more, you've got to eke it out yourself. Maybe they find that a little bit more difficult, and of course they will do. When you've not got a main striker, you can't be relying on a left winger to produce for you all the time. Sometimes he's going to be shackled.
Yeah, they're decent as well. Look at them defensively, the two centre halves. For me, they've got maybe one of the best right backs, up and coming right backs in the Premier League, in Wan-Bissaka. Mm. Great defensively, confidence going forward now. They're a decent side. The left back as well, the Dutch boy.
Yeah. Van Aanholt.
Good player.
Scores goals.
It's all in vain, though, isn't it, if you can't score? It's no good being good all season saying they're decent.
But he's killed it for me now. Trust you.
It's a famous saying, you're only as good as your front two or your front one. And at the minute, you know,
they got a front none.
And again, he comes in with one.
8 goals all season, just 1 point in 5. Tougher Palace against Spurs this weekend. What about Cardiff against Brighton? 12:30 on Saturday. Wake up, lads! It is going to be a good one. Maybe not 0-0, a favourite result. I can tell you, Cardiff and Brighton have never faced each other before in a top flight fixture. This is our fourth new top flight game this season. A little bit of trivia for you. Important game for Cardiff. These kind of games, they've done it against Fulham. Brighton are a side that will look to try and nick a goal and keep a clean sheet.
I think the trivia might be better than the game. But yeah. No, I think it's a massive game for both clubs, because obviously from Cardiff's point of view, these are games they've got to win. If they have any chance, they've got to win. From Brighton, where they have been really good this year, nicking little 1-0s with teams around them. And for a team that wants to stay in the Premier League, a la Brighton, a la Cardiff, that's essential. It's not what you do against the top six. It's these games here, and you know Cardiff have got to get a win. It's as simple as that.
They have to, yeah. Without a doubt. And I'm thinking myself, this has to be Brighton. I'm really looking at it. I'm sure that Chris Hughton is saying to himself, we're better than them. We've moved on now. We're, you know, in the Premier League, we've done ourselves justice in big games. In other games, we haven't done it. We haven't got the result that we deserved. I think Brighton should go there and win this game against Cardiff. Yeah. For me, Cardiff are not going to be a Premier League side next season. I can't see that happening.
I think they'd have more chance of being one if they had someone like Glenn Murray playing for them.
Yeah.
You know, that could be the difference.
One final game to mention, Leicester against Burnley. Burnley first, briefly. 25 goals conceded in their 11 Premier League games. They conceded just 9 in 11 last season. 4 goals minimum in each of their last 3. Awful defensively against West Ham. People like James Tarkowski, poor game. Joe Hart conceding lots of goals. Why are they conceding so many at the minute?
If be honest, if I had that answer, I'd be on that first train up to Burnley and I'd be becoming their defensive coach.
We spoke about it before, Paul. Didn't
quality
we?
Players.
Have they started to believe their own hype? Because that, for me, wasn't. And I'm sure Sean Dyche will be speaking for this week. That is not our DNA. That's not us. We can lose, yes, of course we can lose in the Premier League. We're Burnley. But we lose going down fighting, dogged, rigid, everybody knowing the roles, nobody taking any risks and doing what they want. You're a cog in the team. And last week, it looked like they were just doing what they want. We're now in the Premier League. We're going to start playing open football because we're such good footballers. And let's have a right. They're not.
They're not. I mean,
they're fighting to stick. Yeah. For me, the way they stayed in the Premier League, fighting for their lives, you know, because they were hungry players, it looked like to me, and I'm hoping wrong because I like Burnley and I like Sean, it looked like his players now started to think that it's about something else.
Yeah, they stopped knocking the ball long. They didn't go long at all. He brings on Volks and Woods at the back end of it. They get themselves back into it off the Woods header. Mm. And you think to yourself, here we go. Burnley are getting backed, using what Steve just used, then you going back to with the DNA that everyone knows they've got. But then obviously they get beat. But you think, so why aren't they doing that no more? They were overpassing. And West Ham were breaking them down in midfield and playing through them in midfield. You don't normally get that. There wasn't even any niggly fouls to stop them playing. But you think, so that's not Burnley. Burnley don't do that. Then you think, so their centre-halves are just going to go there, head and volley. Mm-hmm. Defend first, play if we've got 20 acres. Not 20 acres, just get it forward as quick as possible. They're not doing it anymore.
And a final word this week on Leicester City. In this game, they're going to pay tribute to their former owner, who sadly passed away a couple of weeks ago. There was a lot of tributes to him last week, of course. The boss, all those T-shirts the fans wore. The memorials are going to be moved to an area where fans can go and pay their respects, and there's going to be some special embroidering on the shirts as well. Just on the football from last week, Paul, it obviously was very tough for a lot of those players, but it was such a great performance against Cardiff City. Maybe one of the easier places to go in a lot of ways, because Cardiff aren't a particularly good Premier League side, but it was a really intense professional performance, and we'll see something similar this week, won't we?
Oh, without a doubt. And it would have been difficult for those players to play in that game. I mean, there was a perfect excuse for them not for it to work out, because there was a lot on them, so to come through that is very, very difficult.
It'll be the same this week as well. I mean, you saw the emotion before kickoff last week, understandably. And I suppose the difference this week, last week was kind of about the players and the staff, and there were some fans there, some Leicester fans, but it was their first opportunity to get back to action after the tragedy. This weekend, it's the city of Leicester coming together for the first time since the tragedy to pay tribute to the owners and the others that lost their lives. Football, again, will kind of take a back seat, but again, it's a... In times like this, it can be a positive distraction, if that's the right word, and it will be a very emotional occasion. And I think I think it will be a similar sort of atmosphere to last week from the Leicester players.
Well said. Great way to end the show for this week. Thanks to Paul, thanks to Steve, and thanks to David Walker as ever. No preview show next week. It's the Wayne Rooney International Testimonial Weekend. So we'll all be at Wembley Stadium raising our star-spangled banners and raising some funds. Ticket prices, ticket funds, all going to the Football Association. That's good, isn't it? Anyway, that's not for this show. That's for other weeks. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Enjoy that football.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.